Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. Expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to BIB Radio. We are on Black Talk Radio Network. Today is December 15th, 2016, and we are bringing up the rear here in the end of 2016. It's almost over. My goodness. I say that every week. I can't believe it. Let's see. Today, let's see if I can get my co-host on the line here. Robert, are you with me?
Yes, I am.
Perfect. How are you doing tonight?
Wonderful. Well rested and feeling great.
All right. Well, everybody, I don't know what the weather is like in your area. What is the weather in St. Louis, Robert?
Cold.
It's very cold, yes. My phone says it's -7 in St. Louis. I don't know why it says that, but it does. It says it's -7.
it certainly feels like it, that's for sure.
Oh, my God. I don't even know how we handle this every single year. It's just freezing cold. Maybe the older we get, the worse it gets or the worse we feel it. I'm not really sure what it is, but it's funny because when it's winter, I can't even imagine it being summer. Then when it's summer, I can't even imagine the earth or nature or whatever doing this to us by way of winter. I can't imagine having this wintertime experience. It is just ridiculous to me. I'm cold. I need to get on a plane and go somewhere, honestly. It's just ridiculous to me.
Yeah, it's extreme. Chicago is like, it was 0 degrees with a -14 wind chill factor. St. Louis is not too far behind. I mean, it's cold.
It is really, really cold. We were in Chicago the other day, and they had some snow. Matter of fact, it was snowing on our way there, and I was a little concerned because the roadway was very slippery. But because they're used to those extreme things in their weather, they're prepared for it. They have the salt trucks out, and, you know, it's not horrible, although we did see a few people in the ditch, but we also saw people, you know, out there with the salt trucks and taking care of business really quick, which is refreshing because, I mean, nobody wants to be stuck. That's just crazy. And then after it snowed, it was just cold. It just really, really reminds me of Alaska. And people ask me about Alaska all the time, and it's like, it's cold in St. Louis. And it's cold in Chicago. And I don't care how cold it is. To me, cold is cold. Whether you -1 or 15, it's still cold. And personally, I don't like any of it. Ugh, Man, but you know what? If you all are dealing with the extreme cold, I mean, of course, we're BIB, Blacks in Business, but we like to help you prepare for everything that you need to be prepared for, even in your business. What are you doing to make sure that, you know, everything is going to run smooth in your business? You need to be checking into, like, wherever you're working as far as your business. You know, are your pipes wrapped? Are you leaving a little bit of water running? Do you have enough supplies if it's too cold and the electricity goes off and you can't go out or your vehicle stops working? You know, you still have to conduct business. And we talked about this on another show, but we just have to keep reiterating, you never know when an emergency might happen. Here in St. Louis on the news, they actually said that there's going to be a power outage, or there might be a power outage, I'm sorry, because of the weather. So I know that I need to make sure that we have what we need concerning, you know, staying warm and food, because although we have heat, it is just still very cold. So I can't imagine, like, something catastrophic happening and we don't have the heat blowing. Oh my goodness. I was saying earlier, what in the world did people do back in the day before, like, real heat was invented through, like, vents and registers? I know they have fireplaces and all that stuff, but no, I can't imagine standing there by the fire, brisking my hands back and forth. And I don't know. I mean, I do not like being cold. And I vow, like, next year, I just don't want to be in the cold. I want to be in a warm tropical place or just somewhere that just doesn't even think about getting cold. Right. Robert, what did you say? Like, people used to wear some different kind of long johns?
Oh, yeah, I said back in the day, when you said what did they used to do back in the day, I was thinking, like, maybe they had some really thick tweed long johns that they wore. You don't see them today like that, but mm-hmm. they had to have them because you think like this. They traveled by horse and buggy through these type of conditions back in the day, so their clothing had to be of better quality than what we have today, no doubt.
They definitely, I mean, I really would be interested in doing research on that, because we know kind of when we go back to basics, like what our ancestors or grandparents or whatever used to do, we come out with better results. You know, it's this modern technology that is, you know, kind of swayed us into a different way of thinking. But, you know, if we can, we should really do research on that, because, you know, these winters are very hard. This is something else, I'm telling you. I just don't even want to be outside. I wrote on Facebook, I see why bears hibernate. It is cold. People listening to me, hear me. I do not want to be outside. It's cold. This is not funny or ridiculous. I'm being sincere. I do not want to be outside. This is depressing. And honestly, like, I see why people travel to Walmart in their pajamas now, because you just do not want to take off your fuzzy, comfortable pajamas or whatever it is that you use for comfort or psychological comfort from this cold. Oh, my goodness. I guess I shouldn't say Walmart. I mean, that's just such a stereotype. People of Walmart in pajamas, although you do see them. But just, I see why people go out in their pajamas. I mean, they're just warm. I mean, if I had to go out right now, I might have to go in my pajamas, because God knows I do have them on right now. It is very cold.
Well, I don't know about that one, though, because...
I just put on a long coat.
I'm in my snowsuit. That's how I'm going out. No, this is brutal. This is very dangerous type of weather, you know. And you see people that I can't even imagine... the people I see in the summertime with their pajamas on. But, you know, there's a verse in the Quran I used to hear the minister say all the time when he was, you know, give his lectures and trying to warn our people about being prepared. In the Quran, it says that pray that your flight doesn't come in winter. And when you in these extreme, when you go outside right now, can you imagine being outside right now?
No,
with no shoes on?
Nope.
Can you? I mean, think about the people who are using heaters and those that in the past that had a fire and they had to run out of the house in weather like this.
No, I'll give you another one. Imagine being in your home and the KKK roll up on your residence in the middle of the winter and come burn you out of your house. How about that one?
Okay.
I mean, think about the stuff that our people have endured. And I'm sitting here complaining. The heat is on and I'm still complaining. So, I mean, that's just ridiculous. I mean, it's just cold.
We just have to remind ourselves of all the blessings that we have versus what we think is not so great. Because, as you just said, the heat is on. There's somebody right now in this city that don't have heat on at all.
Yep.
I mean, right now as we speak, in these unbearable conditions, there are some people out there that are hurting.
Mm-hmm.
But those of us who are fortunate enough to be able to pay the gas bill or pay the electric bill, we must remember how much of a blessing it is for us to be able to do that. I mean, it didn't just come out of the sky, of course. We had to work hard, study hard, you know, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Works behind the faith, you know,
mm-hmm.
to make this happen. But at the same time, we must always keep in mind it could be a lot worse. So instead of, you know, when I wake up in the morning, I tell people all the time, that's worth celebrating, because the biggest part of that day has been accomplished not out of my will, but out of God's will. So I got to give him the praise, and the rest of it is on me. So what we do in the course of that day is going to determine how that's going to be, and the same for our life. So, I mean, there are going to be people out there, like we just got to talk about, that are less fortunate. Well, we have to have some you know, charity, some type of way to help give back to those who may not have been so blessed. But we got to remember,
oh, yeah,
blessing to be in. If you're in a house right now,
and I think, Robert, wait. I think, are you moving? Because your phone is doing something weird. Let me see.
I don't know.
Or is that just...
No, I'm just in the room.
Okay. Can you hear me?
I hear you well.
Okay,
me well?
Yeah, because your phone... I hear you now. It's like your phone keeps kind of cracking up a little bit, but I just want to make sure that people are not missing what you're saying. Yes, you are right. We do need to... You know, and that's my heart, because, you know, all of us have been in a situation in a time or two where that could have been us. You know, some people super spiritual say, oh, no, not by the grace of God. It couldn't be. Yes, it could be you. You never know what can happen. Of course, we want the best for our lives, and we you know, don't want to be in those situations, but it could be you. You know, it doesn't have to be a financial situation. What if something happens to the furnace in your home and the people can't come out to fix it or something like that? Yeah, it could be you. You could be the one in the cold. So when you see your brother and sister or sister outside, you know, my thing is, don't judge them. You know, you may think that they're on drugs or they got themselves in that situation. I think that that is so wrong. That is not for you to pass judgment on how they got there, but look at the fact that they are there. If you have something to give them, I don't even mean monetarily. Like, you know, I may see somebody that's homeless and it might be raining, I will give them my umbrella. Or if I see them and I have lunch, I may give them my lunch, you know. The thing is, we have to do that, because it's just only right. There's so many people out here. Now, it makes no sense why there's so many homeless people out here, because there are so many houses that are boarded up, so many houses that are in foreclosure. If the government really wanted to do something, they could take all these foreclosed houses and turn them into like a Section 8 thing and open it up to people, you know, some kind of way. They could definitely do that. I mean, I don't care about the little money situation or whatever they want to say, if it takes money. No. It takes money to keep people poor. That's what it is, you know. So I'm just saying, you know, it's cold. There's a lot of people out there that are cold. I even feel sorry for people that have to walk, you know, and when I see people having to walk and they're pushing a stroller, you know, that just really, you really have to appreciate where you are, honestly, because, you know, you're right, it could be worse. But, yep, that is the extreme weather, people. I think you had a weather situation where we were concerned with the, you know, the business. But I think all is well. I think it's going to fare well. What do you think?
I think you're right. I think everything's going to be fine here. And what I would like to see done is possibly a VIB.
Robert, are you moving around because your phone is really doing something? I can't hear you.
Yeah, I was just moving around. Sorry about that, guys. But yeah, we should raise some money for situations like that and use what we know, the knowledge that we know about buying things wholesale and go out and, you know, support the homeless, give them blankets, because, you know, we can buy blankets wholesale, we can buy thermals and socks and gloves wholesale, but what we would need from the people is support to be able to do that. You know, your money can go a lot further with BIB in that effort to aid and assist those who are less fortunate, you know, because of what we do and what we know to do, how we know to buy things wholesale. We can definitely help out in that area. So that's something that we need to CC off air, possibly discuss and put together, and then put it on Facebook. If we're going to do it, we're going to create a Facebook page or a GoFundMe page or whatever, and let's see what kind of love the people really have in their hearts to do this thing, to help out, because I know I'm going to do it. You know, I've already made a commitment to a school to just give them some socks for parents who may be less fortunate financially. I talked to one of the administrators there, and they were telling me the children need underwear and they need socks.
Right.
I know what she meant. So it's been on my heart. The last time we went to Chicago, you know, I'm thinking like, man, I really need to get that school some socks. If it's just 5 dozen socks, that's better than none at all.
Right, right. And you know what? You're right. We should really get on that. Because not only does it do for the people that you're giving, but it does for you. You feel like you are really outreaching into your community. We actually should have an expert, you know, in philanthropy come on the show where we could talk about putting together different projects, because Lord only knows our community definitely needs some philanthropy, but not through some great white savior type of situation, but with us helping one another. So yes, we actually, Jabril Robertson had been talking about his situation with the homeless person, and he said it kind of almost brought him to tears. He suggested that, like, the goods that we get that we cannot use, they're not necessarily like bad, but we can't sell them. We should be like breaking them down into like personal size and giving them to the homeless. I think that's a great idea. You know, yeah, just anything that we could do to put something together for people, we should really do that. I mean, we really, really should do that. And then maybe at the end of the month, when we have things that we need to get rid of, you know, maybe we can liquidate them like that, just give them. I mean, we never throw anything away, but then, you know, we kind of do when things are kind of sitting around. So, yeah, we should definitely put something together like that, and we could put something together for our listening audience and other radio hosts that would like to give, you know. We could definitely put something together for everyone to have the opportunity to give. And, of course, you know, most likely it's a great tax write-off. You know, people are always looking for tax write-offs at the end of the year. So if you're looking to give, and we know this is the end of the year, we have guy named Brother Sharif. You could give him a call and find out what the tax write-off looks like if you would like to give to the homeless or a charitable organization. I'm not sure if it has to be a charitable organization in order for you to get the write-off. You may have to join with someone else's 501c3. I mean, there's ways around everything, but you know, the main thing, your heart should be to definitely give. But let me give you all Brother Sharif Shabazz's phone number if you have some question about taxable donations. You can also give to the Black Talk Media Project, the network that is hosting our radio program. The CEO, Scotty Reed, would greatly appreciate your giving. Your tax-deductible donation is well needed to keep great programming on the air. But again, Brother Sharif Shabazz, his phone number is area code 314-322-3555. Again, 314-322-3555. Just give him a call. He would love to connect with you concerning your taxes and help you out with whatever tax situation you may find yourself in, whether it is filing your taxes this year or previous years and you got this raggedy, rusty, dusty shoebox, or you want to find out about taxable donations. Matter of fact, we may need to have him on. I'm going to call him, I think, during the break and see if he can talk to us about taxable donations. He'll probably be able to come on and speak to us about that. I'm gonna message him now and see if he can come on without me calling him. What was I gonna say? Yeah, it's just really cold. So, bottom line, people, we need to get it together and give.
this is the beauty of entrepreneurship. And again, I tell people entrepreneurship is very spiritual. And when you're in tune spiritually with yourself and your higher power, you know, it's not about the money. You know, we're blessed to be able to have the show. We're blessed for Scotty to be able to have the mind, the desire, the will, the dream to actually put this thing together. And we have a format that we can actually express our views and what it is that's on our mind. Now, at the same time, with that being said, it's such a blessing that we are able to utilize our time to go and research information, travel to different cities, and then not only use that for profit, but use that to help people. That's just the beautiful thing about entrepreneurship, about exercising the God attributes within yourself. You know, when you come to realize, if you accept that God did say he created man and woman in his image and likeness, then I always, when I heard that in the church as a young boy, I always said, man, that means I got a lot of power.
Right.
You know, and but not knowing how to really tap into the power, but there being no examples of how to tap into your God-likeness power, you just really don't know how to do it. If there's no role models around, no business owners, no big dreamers that actually execute on the dream, if they're not around, how do you know the process of tapping into the God within you to bring out of you thoughts and then make them manifest into reality? So this thing about entrepreneurship, it just is so much bigger than the monetary factor that most people think that it is. It's way bigger than that.
I mean, it really is.
Can you imagine how some of these, you know, Caucasians or Arab guys can stand at the top floor of their newly high-rise building and look over the whole city? What, you know, that some of them may be very haughty, but that feeling of accomplishment, what you just did on that level, you got to be feeling so supreme in your own skin. And that's the thing that, for me, that I love about entrepreneurship, because it makes me tap into the very essence of the God that's within me, and actually have that faith to bring out my vision that God put in me, to be able to see an ideal in my head before it actually manifests, and then I can make it come to life the way I saw it in my head. That's a powerful thing.
It is a very powerful thing. But I want to read actually a Proverbs 6:6-10. I mean, this is something that we need to take notice of every day, of our actions and what we're doing concerning our business. What is it that we're doing mentally, spiritually, and physically to move it forward? Are we just sitting complaining? But this scripture is Proverbs 6:6-10, and it says, "Go to the ant, you sluggard, consider her ways and be wise, which, having no captain, overseer, or ruler, provides her supplies in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest. How long will you slumber, O sluggard? When will you rise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep." So we all need to take notice of our sleepiness and our tiredness. I mean, it doesn't mean you can't rest. It doesn't mean that. But are you being sluggish and slothful? And I would even take it into ungratefulness. You know, you sit back and just think, oh yeah, I'm great, I don't have to really do anything, you know. But in entrepreneurship, it's bigger than yourself. If you're an entrepreneur just to serve yourself, I mean, you're not a very good entrepreneur. I mean, I don't think that that's a successful entrepreneur at all. But what we need to do is we need to let everybody know how to get a hold of us. And that is, let's see here. Oh, okay. Uh-oh, I sent the wrong link out to Sharif. But that is calling us at 1-866-510-9025, or you could call 704-802-5056. Platform now, it's Uber Conference, and you can go www.uberconference.com/Black Talk Radio Network, and you can reach us both ways by doing that link in your computer or your phone, or you can call the phone number. I'm actually enjoying it because, again, today I'm talking to my computer. Yay! So exciting.
One more time. 1-866, what else?
510-9025. We're going to go to a commercial break. You're listening to BIB Radio on Black Talk Radio Network.
Black Talk Radio, your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium.
Okay, everybody. We're back. And I am on the phone attempting to call Brother Sharif. So we're going to see if he can actually come on and talk to us about taxable donations. He may be busy. This is like a last minute thing. Yeah, his voicemail is coming on. So maybe we could possibly have him on next week to speak to us about taxable donations. Because I know that's really important that you be able to write off what you give. I mean, I don't do it all the time. I know when I used to give to church all this money, I used to definitely write those things off, but I don't do that anymore. So, he would be a better fit to talk to you about those things. But, okay. So, Robert, today, what did we do?
Oh, wow. We had a very, very wonderful start to our day business-wise, outside of the greatest blessing that we could ever have, which was waking up. And after that blessing, we went to a very, very informative dealer, the Missouri Dealer Seminar, which was just so much information. As I said to the instructor, this information is good for the consumer as well as the dealer. And with this information, people, BIB is definitely committed to getting you what you need on both sides of this coin. And if you don't know how to buy a car, what your rights are, if you would have went to this dealer seminar today, your mind would have flashed back on so many times that you went to the car dealership and purchased a car and that car wasn't running right or whatever, and you would have been in that moment.
Yes.
I mean, we heard some stuff. CeCe, you was there, so say some things. Because I know you were so full of it. You was like, whoa.
Yes, I was. I'm always trying to utilize the information that I'm receiving and apply it to other life situations. So it's like a whole different paradigm for me, because although I'm in the class, I'm taking the information that they're telling me is law and I'm applying it to other situations. That's one thing that I was doing, because you know me, I'm like always on top of that thing. Ooh, this law right here. But I mean, the book itself, well, let me go backwards first. Okay. So I got this wonderful idea like probably a month and a half ago. I'm not sure. When, like 2 months ago. And I said, ooh, you know what? I want to open a car dealership. And because I'm always looking at the flea market as a great opportunity, you know. And I said, you know what? That might be a great opportunity, you know. So I began doing the research. And somebody came and talked to me, I talked to them or whatever, and I'm not one to necessarily, can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you good,
though. Oh, okay, because the little thing is not moving while I'm talking. Okay, anyway, so guy that we know came and talked to me, and, you know, I'm learning this, you know, you don't necessarily take everybody's word as, okay, well, that is the Bible of the situation, because it may not be. You need to do your research yourself. So lo and behold, one night I just got on the computer and I started Googling to find out, you know, because this person basically told me it was a huge obstacle. Well, I like obstacles. I mean, that's been my life story, is obstacles. So when you tell me something like that, I'm like, okay, well, let me tackle this thing. So I Googled and I started looking up, you know, how to become a dealer in Missouri. And this group, Missouri Dealer Seminars, they had put together a nice video for you to listen to, very inviting. They allowed you to sign up. They had times that you could sign up in different cities. And it just so happened, you know, I was able to sign up and then, you know, just go ahead and save the information in my phone, because it was quite a ways away, because I think I was in October or November when I actually signed up, something like that. And signed up in the town nearest me. But what I did recognize, even outside of that, because again, I'm always thinking about other opportunities. Who are these people that are Missouri Dealer Seminars? They are somebody that is allowed, or an entity that is allowed to be a training tool for the people, because you have to take the training. But I was like, well, how do I become a trainer? So as I'm watching and listening to him, I'm like, no, this is a piece of cake. I mean, I'm sure, you know, I could be a trainer if I wanted to do that. And this guy was charging quite a bit of money. Now, he was a great, he was a good instructor. I mean, he was wonderful. But I definitely know I can do that. So I said, okay, this could be another stream of income. You know, we could probably do this together. We could probably do a tag team thing. We could probably set others up to be trainers and have like little things all over the city, just like they're doing, or all over the state, just like they're doing. So, of course, the first thing I wanted to do was ask him, but you know how that goes. When you ask them, then comes the hate. So instead of me asking him, I'm going to go to the source in the book that he gave me, because was that the first page? There's like the second page. It's important addresses and phone numbers. And so on the important addresses and phone numbers, there's a dealer support number. So I said, I'm going to call the dealer support number and I'm going to find out how I can actually be a trainer, you know, on top of becoming a licensed, licensed dealer. So I'm excited about that because I will be calling to find out about that. And that's something that we all need to do. We need to be thinking in a multifaceted way concerning the business endeavors that we're looking to enter. But a lot of times our subconscious comes in and says, ooh, how could I be a teacher? Who am I? You know, maybe I didn't finish eighth grade or whatever. No. Don't even let that enter in. You are a teacher. You're teaching something every day of your life, especially if you have children, you know. So it's not hard to do. And there's actually people now that can put together your whole training plan for you. All you have to do is get the necessary information that is required, get what it is that the state is requiring you to teach, and you could go online and you can find people that will put together your training information for you. You could even call us. You could email us. If you have trainings or teachings that you're trying to put together, even outside of this dealer training, and you want to put together a training, we have that information. I have a person that you could definitely talk to in consultation about putting your package together. But again, when we look to go into these different business endeavors, you should always be thinking in a multifaceted way. So with that being said, let's move forward. So in this big book, how many pages is the book? This book is like 175. Okay, let me see.
175. Yep. I'm looking at it. It's
about your book is bigger than mine. Mine is 168.
Yeah, mine's 168. I just looked at it.
Oh, I was curious to say. You got a different book than me, but you know, I love like this type of reference information. As a matter of fact, when Robert and I went and sat down, I was like, where is his curriculum? So I thought it was going to be a bunch of college type of thing where I was going to have to like take a bunch of notes and just really make sure that I wrote nice, because my writing is extremely sloppy. So I was worried. So what I did was I actually set my phone recorder in advance so that I could record all what he was saying. But then I was happy to see that the guy, his name was Dallas something, I don't remember. You remember his last name?
Jones, I think it was, wasn't it?
No, Johnson. Thank you. I knew it was because I was like, that's a black name, Dallas Johnson. But, right? I was like, okay, so Dallas Johnson, he put together the curriculum, the book, really nice book. Well, his team did. So I was excited to see that. I didn't have to take a bunch of notes. Now, of course, you still should take notes. For me, taking notes allows me to make sure that I'm engaging in what the person is saying. And now we're going back to learning styles. You know, when we're sitting in a classroom environment, what is your learning style? You know, that's a whole nother story, but yes. But the first thing I did when we got in there is I made sure we sat in the front, because that's what you should do. When you are before a classroom setting or something like that, you need to make sure that you are in the front row or as closest to the front as you can be, because again, that will hold your attention. You know, if you're in the back, you're tempted to get on your phone and be doing all this doodling and nonsense. But if you're in the front of the class, then you are there in front of the teacher. He's looking at you, you're looking at him, you're engaging, and you're getting, you know, the information that you need, that you paid for, or you know, that kind of thing. So you need to just make sure that you're in the front. But anyway, what I did with this book, I love books. I love manuals too. I went through the back and, you know, they have all these references in the back. We got so much information. I mean, Robert was really excited. But what it says is, okay, I'm going to read the back because he has a final thought back here. It says, final thoughts. I would like to thank you for attending the Missouri Dealer Seminar. I invite you to contact me at any time with any questions you may have. And it says, I truly believe a dealer's license offers unlimited opportunities with unlimited earning potential. It also brings great amounts of responsibility and decisions based on complete integrity. I am sure you will operate your dealership with the highest ethical standards and keep your Missouri Motor Vehicle Dealer's license for many years. Many, many years, it says. I would also like to ask you to please leave any thoughts, comments, or success stories on MissouriDealersSeminars.com website. Please leave your comments at, and then he left the information there, and it says, thank you again, and I would like to wish you the very best of luck with your new business. Now, go make some money. Sincerely, Dallas. His name's Dallas, not Dallas. D-E-L-U-S, Dallas Johnson. Lord have mercy. It sounds like Dallas to me, but Dallas. Yeah, Dallas. So I really enjoyed his teaching style. It was great. And, you know, as we think about putting together a curriculum, I definitely want to use them as a model. I don't know, again, if he's user-friendly that way to where if you want to teach the class, he would be helpful. I don't know. I have no idea, but I'm kind of leery with that thing. I like to go straight to the people that I need to talk to and then perhaps branch out. But anyway, in the back of the book, we're still here. And they have, because we got lots of information about going to the auction, which that's where you should be when you're trying to buy a car. Even if you're a regular person and not a dealer, you should be at the auction because we learned that you are spending so much money because that markup is so great from the auction to the dealership lot. I mean, most people already know that, but for some reason, we run out and we go buy these cars and we're happy to pay these 5-year notes with 27% interest. Yeah, I had 27% interest one time. That was ridiculous. But yeah, we're just happy to do that stuff. And so we got to get out of that. So in the back of this book, it's a Missouri dealer auctions list. And then they have Alabama, they have Alaska. And I guess it's just like all over the United States, they list several references for dealership auctions, and Mannheim is all over the place. I mean, I just heard about that today. I think. I don't know. Maybe Robert, you told me.
They are the largest auctioneer in North America.
Are they? Okay. Yeah. See, I don't know anything about that. But then when we get,
They're all over.
I see. Then when I go to the next set of information, you have car dealer floor planning, plan finance providers. See, now, who does that? I mean, I guess you could get like a consultation, but car dealer floor plan financing providers, that we didn't talk about that. We skipped over a whole lot of information because we only have 4 hours, but that would be interesting to find out exactly what that's about. And then car dealer insurance providers, there's some things on insurance that you definitely need to be aware of, and dealer surety bonds, that's something you definitely need to know about. And then they have salvage vehicle auctions. Now, why would we want to go to a salvage vehicle auction, Robert?
Well, I mean, I'm going to be assuming that those vehicles are maybe damaged or whatever, and people that would have junkyards. I'm not real sure, but I'm just assuming this, you know, would go to those type of auctions because they probably sell them for really, really, really cheap prices. And they probably got, like, the vehicles. Are you there, CeCe?
I'm here.
Okay, yeah, they probably got the vehicles from insurance companies, people, you know, trade in the cars to the insurance companies and take the settlement and don't want the car. I know sometimes the insurance companies have those type of auctions, salvage auctions as well. But I'm thinking that that's pretty much what that is. But don't quote me, but that's my thought on that. I've heard about the salvage auctions in the past. And type of auctions. But mm-hmm. let me say something to you about the whole ideal of people going to auctions. I hear oftentimes a lot of people having fear of buying a car from an auction for whatever reason. They think that they may get a bad car. But for the most part, you know, you won't get a bad car. You can pay a few dollars more at the Manheim auction and get where it's like an insurance to where if something goes wrong with that car within so many days, I think it's 30 days, that car, you won't be stuck with the car. You can take the car back. But I got a dealer friend, associate of mine that's going to give us some better information. We're going to schedule him to come on the show. I'm hoping he can come on tonight. If you see a St. Louis number, it might be him. But if not, we're going to get some clarity on those type of things. I've been to the auction several times and bought cars myself. And if you do pay, I think it's maybe $50 more or something like that, $100 more. I mean, but even if it's $100 more, to pay for that surety is worth paying for. So those people, most people's fears about going to auctions really shouldn't be. Now, if you're going to an auction to the public, you may have a concern there, because I'm not sure if the public auctions offer those type of guarantees that if you buy a car and the transmission go out or the motor go out, then they're able to get you your money back from the dealer that you bought it from. Now, the flip side to that fear is, where do you think the cars that you buy off the car lots on the corner car lots, on the big car lot, big used car lots, where you guys think those cars come from? They come from the dealer's auction.
No, you sure? I thought they came from like car heaven, used car heaven. You know what? I'm making a joke, because you know what? Again, a lot of revelations came to pass when we took this class, because I sat there and I thought the same thing. I said, why are people not just going straight to the source? Because of course these dealers are getting the car from the auction. Sometimes somebody traded something in, or sometimes somebody sold something to them, but I think the bulk of their cars come from these auctions. And I was like, dang, we are just missing the boat in this situation. We totally should be informed so that we can make better decisions about buying concerning vehicles. Now, me, I did buy my last car from the auction, and I had a great experience. I bought a Honda Odyssey van. That's what I wanted. And I saw some cars going for as low as $400, okay? I mean, cars that work, because they would roll the car. This is a public auto auction. They rolled the cars up in front. They, you know, they turned them on and like rode them around in a circle and they bid it on them or whatever. I saw some cars going for $400. It just depended on how the car came into the auction. If it was donated, it could go for the super low. I mean, when I say super low, I'm talking about $150. Now, if it was on a consignment, then that was a different situation, because someone had consigned it with the auction people, and they would tell them, hey, you know, don't go any lower than this amount. So anyway, I got my Honda Odyssey minivan that I absolutely loved from the auto auction for only $1,200 for a Honda. Oh, it was great. Now, I checked out some information and found out the transmissions go out. So you know what? I went ahead and I changed the transmission. That was $2,900. But guess what? It beats going to buy a new car and financing one. I would just rather put the money into my car. And that was a wonderful vehicle. And I bought that, it was like 2 years ago. I can't even think now, but it was almost 2 years ago. But yeah, that was a great experience. I didn't have a bad experience. And the actual place that I deal with, They have a regular car lot too. They have a regular car lot, and then they do the auction. So then they are subject to whatever the rules are in Washington State concerning the dealers and the auctions or whatever. But these rules are very interesting. I mean, from state to state, you have different rules, but then you also have the federal guidelines and laws that you have to go by also, which we found out. And it was funny because in class today, we heard the instructor speaking, but then there were other people kind of piping in because they were experienced already. I don't know. What were those people? They already worked in a dealership or had a dealership, Robert? Who were they?
No, they own used car lots. The girl, the woman, and the big guy, I recognized them. You know, I'd have been to auctions several times. I'd have been to quite a few car lots. And when you are just in retail, period, you're going to meet all different types of retailers, you know. So that's why I recognized them. I just didn't know exactly from where, you know. But yeah, they own car lots.
Why were they at the class? That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Well, they could have possibly been fined, you know, because sometimes, as the instructor said, if you get fined, and there are so many ways that a car dealership can be fined and have to attend that class again.
Yeah, I did recognize that. But see, if I had been called out like that, I don't think I'd be speaking up. I'd be kind of embarrassed if I was back in the class again. But that's just me. You're right, though. There are several ways that you could be fined. You could be fined from the federal people, or you could be fined by the local people. They talked about having that, what is this sticker? Lord have mercy. What is the sticker called? Buyer's Guide. The Buyer's Guide. I'm looking at it. Mm-hmm.
That's the says as is, no warranty.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the sticker that, you know, as we learned tonight, the consumer, this information is not even necessary for the consumer to know about how important it is to have that sticker on every vehicle on your lot. And just considering to be a dealer, see, that's why I say it was good that those two dealership owners were at that class, because Dallas didn't share the information in reference to being fined for having a car on the lot and what that looked like. But those dealers were fined for that. And so they said that they've come to realize that from the time that you purchased the car at the auction, carry those buyer guides with you. Put them in the window of your car at that time, because if you pull a car on your dealership lot and that car is not if the car is not for sale or something of that degree, I can't remember exactly, but if that car is on that lot and the paperwork is not posted in that car, and the inspectors come by and see that car on the lot, they're gonna question you about the car. And if that's the dealership's car and it's not properly papered, then that's a fine right there.
Oh yeah, $300 they said.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so if you have cars and I was like, well, those cars, for whatever, if they don't have a paper in it or whatever, they would be like on the street. You know, because that's not the street is not your property. But I mean, like they said, carry the papers with you. If you buy it, just go ahead and stick that buyer's thing in there, and then you won't have that problem. But back to the buyer's guide, that is going to actually change, or it has changed already, so it'll have a different look to it. And we also learned today, but just because that buyer's guide is there and they always have that box check talking about as is, no warranty, you will pay all costs for any repairs, the dealer assumes no responsibility for any repairs regardless of any oral statements about the vehicle, that's not necessarily true. I mean, that's just not really true. There's always some kind of recourse when you just buy a car. I know for me, one time I bought a car. Matter of fact, that was when I first moved to Washington. I bought a car, and I got on the freeway, and that thing cut off. I was like, oh my goodness. And I was young then, so I really didn't have no clue what to do. But I was able to take that car right back and get my money, and that was that. But a lot of times in these situations, because of your credit or you feel like they did you a great service because you actually got in that car when they're actually charging you a high percentage rate and they're getting over on you, but you just really don't speak up and you don't say anything and you just get bullied. After taking this class, I would never be bullied again if I had to finance a car, which I hope I never have to do. Because like Robert was saying before, I could think back to some times that I was like, oh my goodness. I went to a dealership, as a matter of fact, it was like maybe 2 months ago. And we learned that one of the rules is you have to have a landline phone and it can't be cordless. So you have to have a corded phone in your location. I went to a dealership and they didn't have a landline phone. They had a cordless phone. And another thing I noticed, the dealer himself was not on premises. The woman that was there was just a warm body, and that's okay. You just have to have a warm body there to kind of mind the station or whatever. And that's what she did when I needed some help. She actually called him, and she was just there. And so, I mean, just the little rules, it's interesting. It doesn't seem very difficult. Of course, they went through all the paperwork and, you know, all the, well, not all. Let me not say all because this book is very big. Again, they could not begin to try to cover this in 4 hours. Huh? All
right.
What'd you say? Oh, you just said right. Okay.
I just said right, but some of the things that we learned, I mean, you have to deal with the notice stuff, but as a consumer, you need to know that dealers are not allowed to sell you a car on a Sunday.
That's in St. Louis.
That's in St. Louis?
That's in St. Louis. That is not in Washington. That's here.
I wonder how that travels. Well, I know, like he said.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
As he was saying today, that well, if that's only here in St. Louis, then as the instructor was saying that, you know, that your dealership license is at stake. If the a state trooper passed by on a Sunday and see you out on a lot, and you may just be conversing with a potential customer, and to the state trooper, it looks like you're making a sale. You can't even do that. There was one guy that asked the question, well, stating something about customer service. If that happens, I mean, you don't want to be looked at as having bad customer service. I was like, well, just stay off. Don't go to the dealership on a Sunday. Then, if you know you can't sell a car on a Sunday, stay away from the dealership. If you can't stay away from the customer,
I got something here for you. It says the battle over Sunday sales legislation to allow sales not good for business or workers. So, car dealers hate government regulations, right? Not on a Sunday. In Illinois, Texas, and New Jersey, lawmakers who want to allow Sunday sales face vehement opposition from dealers. Sunday sales, dealers argue, are too hard to conduct with banks closed, make hiring and keeping quality workers difficult, and are disliked by most consumers. The hours we work now are long enough that consumers have plenty of time to buy a car during the week, says Bob Mueller, general manager of Mueller Honda Gurney in Gurney, Illinois. A lot like to come here on Sundays to look and not be bothered by somebody. Wait, a lot, yeah. Okay, so it gives salespeople and managers time to spend with their families. Currently, 18 states ban or restrict Sunday car sales. In those states that allow them, many dealers say they are open that day only because competition demands it. We like to be closed for the employees, said Loy Todd, president of the Nebraska New Car and Truck Dealer Association in Lincoln, Nebraska allows Sunday sales. About 10 years ago, Nebraska dealers tried to get a law to prohibit them, but it was controversial. So dealers remain open on Sunday, he said. So let's see, Utah and Texas, a dealership must not sell cars either Saturday or Sunday. Most choose to close on Sunday. Michigan, the law states if a dealership is located in a county that has a population below 130,000, it can sell cars on a Sunday. That seems backwards. There is another exception for anyone who observes the Sabbath on a different day. Nevada, there is no statewide ban on Sunday sales, except that franchised car dealerships in Clark County do have to close on Sunday. That is a... we're supposed to be at a break. Oh, my goodness. You're listening to BIB Radio on Black Talk Radio Network. We're going to come back with this after these messages. I just realized the time. My goodness.
Radio since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
And we're back. Again, you're listening to BIB Radio on Black Talk Radio Network. We're here every Thursday at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. If you are listening by podcast, feel free to join us live, where you can call in and state your piece, make your comments, or whatever you would like to say. We are happy to listen to you. If you would like to contact us in between shows, you can email us at gmail.com. Oh, my gosh. Okay. We are blacksinbusiness@gmail.com. So I was reading the article, but hold on just one second. Robert, you can keep talking. I have to press hold. So why don't you go ahead and do you have in your book? Of course you do. I was going to have you. Let's see. Where's the page where they like give you this the list of what you need to do? Well, you could go ahead and read like just the highlights of how to become a licensed motor vehicle dealer. Like just read a few of those and kind of talk about that for a minute. I have to step out for just a second, okay?
What page are you on with that?
Page 2.
Okay, not a problem.
Okay.
So here's some of the things. Say you must complete a dealer application form in the state of Missouri. That's ours form is DOR 4682. Second, before you receive your dealer's license from the Department of Revenue, you must pass a $12 criminal background check. And I'm sure if you have something criminal in your background, and it's maybe not related to car theft or stealing the money, I would still see if you could get that license, if that's something that you're striving to do. But they do want a criminal background check. You must get a fictitious register your fictitious name with the state that you live in Missouri. It's only $7 to actually come up with a fictitious business name, which is really simple. You must have a place for a business to conduct your business the sole purpose of selling the vehicles, this building can have the same address as your home and can even be an attached garage. Interesting. You must have an area that is only used for the purpose of the business. You can also locate your business in any commercially zoned area that allows an automotive business. You must keep all books, records, and license in this building at all times. This is an opportunity for people to really, really cash in on becoming a dealer. Your place of business must contain a working telephone at all times. Cell phones and cordless phones reaching from another building do not qualify. You must check your local zoning ordinances to make sure an automotive business is allowed in that location you have chosen for your dealership. So a lot of times we put the impossible in front of our efforts to make something happen, and all you got to do is just really go through the process. It's not nothing too big that you can't accomplish. You must have a display lot with room for multiple motor vehicles. This lot must be for the exclusive use of your business. Any vehicles located on your lot must be for sale. This goes back to what I just said earlier. I'm going to read that one more time. Any vehicles located on your lot must be for sale, and the lot must have an unobstructed view from the nearest public street. Okay. You may only place your vehicle inventory on this lot. Vehicles not owned by you cannot be located on your lot. You cannot place your vehicles for sales. Then this is another important one. You cannot place your vehicles for sale anywhere else unless you are participating in a legally sanctioned off-site show or sale. Okay? And we talked about that. You can't drive your cars to make a sale. If you own a car lot, you can't take your car to somewhere to show the car. They have to come to your car lot to see that car, and that sale has to be made to the car lot. You can never show, as again, you can never show or curb your vehicles for sale at a non-licensed location. When it's curb, it means, you know, set it outside, away from the dealership. You know how you see cars on a private lot, and it just maybe it may have some dealership like pricing on it. Well, if you're a dealer, you can't do that. A private citizen may be able to get away with that. You would need a permanent business sign. This sign can be mounted on the exterior of the business building.
Wait, Robert.
Yeah.
Scotty's trying to ask you something.
Thank you, CC.
Oh, go ahead, Scotty.
Hey, Robert. Interesting topic tonight. I just, before you moved on further, I had a question, because I see these people with, and they, some of them do have dealer license, I imagine, but this one person is just a regular home. Now, I live in a rural area, so maybe that has something to do with it, but there are two places I have bought cars from that are basically these people houses, man. And this one, he like got a garage where he work on the cars, but on his little property he might have like 10, 11 cars at any time. But this is in a residential area on his property, and then a little bit up the road from him there's this person. It don't even look like a dealership. At least this other guy set it up to look like a dealership. But the other guy that live up the street from him, he might have four or five cars just sitting in, but it's not a dealership. It's like he just pulled the cars up. So I'm assuming they have license.
Now, let me say something to you on that, Scotty. In terms of that, that could be a zoning issue, as we heard earlier today, that that could be based on a zoning issue where for wherever that particular place you're talking about, that the municipality allow that to be zoned where they can do that. And as it said here in the book, it says that that your house could be used as that office, and it said something about a garage. I just read that a second ago. Yeah, it says wait a minute, where did I read that at? You must have a spot with the room for multiple motor vehicles. This lot must be used for the exclusive use of any vehicles located on the lot must be for sale. I think it was up here. You may also, wait a minute, here we go. You must have a place of business to be used for the sole purpose of selling motor vehicles. This building can have the same address as your home and can even be an attached garage. So there you have it. You know, based on where you are, that could be very legal, and that would be an issue that, you know, something that you would have to call your local municipality, city hall there, and to see how that works for you.
Well, let me cut in real quick too. We found out that although it may be okay in some instances, like okay, the state statutes are this, but then your local city or your municipality could have some different rules. And Dallas told us that he remembers somebody bought a property because they were going to put a dealership on it, and they went to their local municipality and they're like, nope, we're not having no dealerships in here. So you could totally like really be messed over if you jump the gun. So you really need to find out, you know, what is allowed. I mean, like I was talking to Robert before, what you start out doing is taking these classes. When you find out or figure out that you have an interest, you take the classes, gather the information before you go out and buy stuff. That doesn't make sense. You need to gather information before you jump the gun and start buying stuff. And although we're reading these rules, now, because I've had to deal with administrative law before myself, as I read these rules, I see where they put the SOS.mo, which is the administrative law in Missouri. So although this book is written, you still can go back in the state administrative rules or administrative law and find out what the actual wording is, because when these people are contracted by the state, they may not have the proper wording. They may have some swaying wording that makes you think that you actually have to do thus and so when it doesn't say that in the law. So you have to make sure that you look up the law or the state law or the state statute yourself and compare it against number four, where it says you must have a place of business to be used for the sole purpose of selling motor vehicles. This building can have the same address. You need to balance that against what the statute is for licensed motor vehicle dealers. That's something I learned a while ago. So go ahead, Robert, because I'm actually, after you're done, I'm going to go back to that article I was reading talking about the Sunday, because before you know it, we will be out of time. So go ahead.
But what about Craigslist? What about Craigslist? Huh? What about Craigslist?
Craigslist, they can list on Craigslist. They are, they do have the ability to list on Craigslist.
But dealers have to make it known that they are dealers.
Yes.
they can't just post as a private owner when they're a dealer, when they actually are a dealer, licensed dealer.
Yeah, they said Craigslist is really up on that. If they put something up that's like not giving the correct information as far as them being a dealer or not, Craigslist is on top of it and they remove it. I don't know how they know, but I mean, that's what we were told today. So yeah, they could definitely use social media to sell their cars. There's a guy on Facebook on the St. Louis one. He, you know, it's funny because now that we know this information, I feel like I'm going to be scrutinizing everybody's dealership and what everybody's doing and how they're posting their sign and if they have a landline or not. I'm going to be doing all that. But but yeah, go ahead, Robert. Finish reading this so we can get back to that Sunday thing.
Okay, so I was talking about the business sign. The sign can be mounted on the exterior of the business building or erected in the display area. Your sign must have the name of the dealership displayed in letters at least 6 inches in height and must be clearly visible to the public. A banner is not an acceptable business sign. Your hours of operation must also be posted prominently somewhere on the exterior of the building for your customers to see. Okay, number 7, you must submit one color photograph of your business. It must include your business building, display lot, and sign. It must be at least a 5x7 inch picture and no larger than 8x10. If another business is at the same location, the dealer must post a sign showing display parking for the dealer inventory. Meaning that if you had a like a strip mall or whatever, then you have to designate parking space, and it has to be known to the customer that this is a designated parking area for that dealership. They talked about that today. Number 8, you must maintain insurance on every vehicle on your you own during the entire license year. You must provide a copy of your dealer garage insurance policy with your dealer application. You may visit the website to do that. That's number 9, is you must provide either an original surety bond in the amount of $25,000 or an irrevocable letter of credit in the amount of $25,000.
Okay, so let's talk about those two, because that is how you get the ball rolling with being able to get this going, because that can be seen as a roadblock, number 9. So let's go ahead and look up what is a surety bond. Okay, so it says a surety bond is defined as a contract among at least 3 parties: the obligee, the party who is the recipient of an obligation, the principal, the primary party who will perform the contractual obligation, the surety, who assures the obligee that the principal can perform the task. So you have to purchase a surety bond. And what we found out, in order to get the surety bond, you just simply have to find an insurance company or a bond company, insurance company, that will do this for you. And from what I heard, now I haven't checked it out yet, they go off of a credit check. So we need to find out if that's true. Now, sometimes people are all in a scramble and a frazzle dazzle about their credit. Now, immediately when they told me this thing, I was like, well, we could probably do that off of our business credit. You know, if you use your business information for the credit, because you're doing business as this company or whatever, so why would you not be able to run your credit as your business credit to get the surety bond? That should give you a better angle and getting a good score if that's what's going on here. So then irrevocable letter of credit. So let's see here. Now, was that the did I just mix the two up?
No, you didn't. You just spoke on the surety bond.
Okay, I'm just trying to make sure I didn't. Okay, irrevocable letter of credit. Okay, so that definition is okay. What is the meaning? Hold on.
Now that revocable letter of credit definitely goes off your credit score.
Okay, so it says an irrevocable letter of credit is a financial instrument used by banks to guarantee a buyer's obligations to a seller. It is irrevocable because the letter of credit cannot be modified unless all parties agree to the modifications. So those are the two ways that you're going to get the ball rolling. Go ahead.
Could you repeat that, what you just read?
Oh, yes. Okay. So, okay, I think I can repeat what I just said. Hold on. Okay, so an irrevocable letter of credit is a financial instrument used by banks to guarantee a buyer's obligation to a seller. It is irrevocable because the letter of credit cannot be modified unless all parties agree to the modifications.
This sounds like to me, please correct me if I'm wrong, I'm trying, because this is all new to me. It sounds like when you go to the bank, it sounds like the bank is the third party that's facilitating the sale. Because even when, if you buy a car from a person, individual, I mean, still the deed, I'm saying the deed has to be notarized and all of that. There's a transaction, and if the person, I mean, is that dealing with car payments or something when it's saying the buyer?
No, Scotty, this is totally dealing with you getting a license to open up your car lot.
I understand that, but what's the purpose?
The cars that you're going to pull into your lot. Let's see here.
Now, my other question was going to be about when you said, okay, all the cars that you have in your possession have to be insured at all times. Some people may see that as a roadblock, but I'm sure it is not like insurance where we take out individual insurance, because, I mean, really, I only pay $5 a month for insurance. That's because I work from home. I don't have to travel. I told them I don't go no more than 5 miles from my house. So that's $5.
Okay.
So my insurance is $5 a month. So if these cars just going to be sitting on the lot, and I guess if you're going to let them test drive it, it might have an impact on. So that's what I'm trying to get, you know, visualized.
Yes, yes.
That's the thing right there, Scotty.
Wait, hold on, right here, right? It's right here. We didn't finish the statement because I went into the definitions, but it says at the bottom, the Missouri Department of Revenue requires either a bond or letter of credit to protect your customers against any legal claims against your dealership. So that's what, you're absolutely right, things like that. And the guy, Dallas, told us that, what did he say? There was a young lady that provided some insurance, but she really didn't have insurance. It was like fake insurance, and she took the car out on the test drive, and she ran into somebody else, and they didn't have insurance. So the insurance, or the whoever, somebody found out that the attorney had found out that the dealership had insurance. Of course they do. Then the dealership itself was actually sued. So if those people who are driving your cars are not insured and they get in an accident, then it kind of goes back on you. So those surety bonds or revocable lines of credit go with that whole piece. But in my experience, like the dealer or the salesman actually either drives the car or rides with me. So, I mean, I guess that's just what it is. It's to protect the dealership against any claims against, you know, if something happens like that.
Now, on the flip side of that, from a business owner point of view, and being in the position of being a consumer, when we went to go look at that Audi some months back. Now, I don't even think I provided an insurance card to drive that car. Do you remember?
No, no, because they usually don't ask for that. They usually just ask for your license.
Now, me being a businessman coming from this class,
we asking for insurance.
All the way. I need to see. Now, you can sell. They also say you can sell a personal car without insurance, though.
Yeah, well, you know what? We will be seeking legal advice from a licensed attorney that deals with these things. Because although you took this class, it's the first step. You know, because as you saw, there was Robert, Dallas who was teaching. Go ahead.
You can't do that in North Carolina, so it's very state to state. North Carolina, yeah. If you buy a car for a lot, you have to get your insurance over the phone, however you do it. Usually you're going to be, you know, you doing that before you go down there to buy the car if you know you're going to buy it. So you, in North Carolina, before you can drive off a lot, you already had to have insurance. And they give you a temporary 30-day tag for you to get your registration. But you ain't driving off without it being insured. That's state law.
That's state law in Washington, too, and it's state law everywhere, pretty much, because you have to have insurance to be on the road, period.
Right.
Go ahead.
Did you hear that part when he said about being able to actually buy the car without the insurance?
He didn't talk about that, but the thing is, this is the thought. If you buy the car, you're going to have to drive it off the lot. So if you drive it off the lot, you're then driving illegally if you don't have the insurance.
Well, necessarily. You can have it towed.
That's right. Okay. You can have it towed.
You could have it towed, but who's got the insurance if something happens on the tow truck? The tow company? I guess so.
Yeah, well, tow company would have to have that. They have to be on it, too.
Well, I mean, you know, to me, that's a whole lot of checking because, I mean, in another scenario, I had a truck. So. But, yeah. Yeah, I guess that's something that we would have to check into because, again, you know, this is our first day and we got the information. And we would have to dig into the statutes a little bit more to find out if you actually have to have insurance to purchase the car. Or, you know, how that works.
Yeah, you just couldn't be able to drive it off that lot.
Yeah, you couldn't drive it off that lot. But let's see. So you are at number, we did the surety bond. So go with number 10. And let me see. Yeah, we got a few more left. Yeah, because we want to be able to get, I think Scotty might have that video. I'm not sure. Get to the little video so the man can provide the twist. We can hear what he's talking about, but go ahead with number 10.
Okay, so your business must maintain regular working hours of at least 20 hours per week between 6 a.m. and 10 p.m. You must be open a minimum of 4 days, and motor vehicle dealers must be closed on Sundays. Your dealership must always be staffed during your posted hours of operation. Power sport dealers can open and sell power sports on Sundays. All Sunday sales of cars and trucks are prohibited by Missouri law. Okay,
so now that's a great segue. Let's segue back into that article that I was reading about those Sunday sales. So let me go back to Michigan. The law states if a dealership is located in a county that has a population below 130,000, it can sell cars on Sunday. There is another exception for anyone who observes the Sabbath on a different day, Nevada. There is no state ban on Sunday sales except that franchise car dealership in Clark County to have that is a county ordinance, not a state statute, and it does not apply to used only dealerships. I think I skipped over something. Clark County is North Las Vegas and Henderson. Rhode Island allowed open from noon to 6 p.m. Maryland allowed in 4 of 26 counties. Montgomery, Charles, Prince George, and Howard, North Dakota dealers can be open, but no car sales are allowed. Okay. Therefore, most dealerships are closed on Sunday. So you guys might want to check that. And it says, Illinois has banned Sunday sales since 1983. Dealer Mark Scarpelli remembers life before the band when his car dealer father was never home. I was 4 or 5, violins. My dad would wake me up to say hello to me because he worked 7 days a week, says Scarpelli, president of Raymond Chevrolet Kia in Antioch, Illinois. I actually thought my uncle was my father. It was kind of a joke. Okay. Scarpelli does not want to work 7 days a week as his dad did. Okay, so I'm not going to read the whole thing. We'll post this in BIB. So that is an issue where people actually don't want Sundays, but I'm pretty sure we could find people that do want Sundays, either in this article or other articles, and it's good to read both views. But if you are in Missouri, you cannot operate on Sundays, and as Dallas told us, you know, you just got to kind of ignore the people and don't talk to them because it could be seen as doing business. Okay, so go to number 11.
Right. Just check this. For those who may be interested, check your local city hall or state law for that particular, for being a dealer, if that's what you want to do.
Right.
Number 11. One of the final steps to obtaining your Missouri dealer's license is your law enforcement certification. I'm sorry. You will need to make an appointment with a law enforcement officer to inspect your business location to make sure it meets all of the dealer license requirements. If your dealership will be located, okay, it goes into Boone County, this so many counties, then you need to check with the St. Louis City. And if it's located in other parts of the city, then you need to check, or the county needs to be checked. You need to check with St. Louis County. Your inspection must be conducted by a member of the Auto Theft Division of St. Louis City or St. Louis County Police Department. You may call them at this particular phone number. So wherever you are, it may differ from how it's handled here in St. Louis. Maybe in your city or state they have a specific group of people that handle this type of thing, but you have to call your local government to find that out. Here in St. Louis, the city and county, they deal with the Auto Theft Division.
Wait, I think we missed another commercial. Uh-oh. We go to a commercial. We'll be right back. Talk Media Project funds the use of new media technology in efforts to restore independent Black voices to the myriad of issues affecting Afro-descendant people all over the planet. If media can control the minds of the masses, as Malcolm X once said, then you must ask yourself, who is in control of the media targeting the masses of Black people today? Help bring back independence, self-determination, and respect for Black culture in the production of global media by joining the effort to crowdfund new Black media for the new millennium. Visit blacktalkmediaproject.org for more information on how you can invest in public Black radio for the masses. Yes. Everybody, we're Black. We're Black. Yes, we are Black. We're Black, and we are back. Invest in Black Talk Media. Well, I am getting tongue-tied at the last half hour here. My goodness. Well, invest in Black Talk Radio, Radio Network, so that we can keep great programs on like ours and Scotty's and David's, so you can hear us all the time. We have great programming. I mean, sometimes I have a hard time going on with the rest of my day because of Black Talk Radio. I mean, although you can take it with you, you just kind of want to sit there and be taking notes and really be engaged with the great information that comes forth. Like tonight, you know, we're giving you information on becoming a dealer. Right now, particularly, we're talking about Missouri because that's where we are. But I encourage you, if you're interested in us helping you with this information, you can contact us at weareblacks with an S. And as you hear this around in the podcast, just know that you can contact us, and we will help you. Absolutely. So, Robert, where were you at?
Okay, so where am I? I'm right here. If your dealership is located in a Missouri county not listed above, you will need to contact a member of the Missouri Highway Patrol to conduct your certification. Your inspection will be conducted by a Missouri Highway Patrol trooper or a Missouri Motor Vehicle Inspector. Just call them and tell them you would like to schedule a time to have your business inspected in order to certify for a dealer's license. Okay. Always be patient and courteous no matter how long it takes. They will inspect your business when they can. Okay. The law enforcement certification is required every year to renew your license for the first 3 years in business. After you have been in business for 3 years, you will only be required to have your dealership certification by a law enforcement officer every other year. Okay, step number 12. I think this is the last one. It may be. Let me see.
Yeah, it is.
This is the last one. So another step in obtaining your Missouri dealer's license is to attend a state-mandated Missouri dealer educational seminar like we did today. When you complete your course, Missouri dealer seminars will issue you – I'm sorry, Missouri dealer seminars will issue your dealer educational seminar license. You will need to include – your original certificate of completion when you mail in your dealer application packet, okay? Your certificate of completion is good for 1 year, and not 1 year in a day, CPT people. Mm-hmm. Exactly 1 year, okay? And they specifically say if you a day late, you a dollar short. Okay, so you must apply for your dealer license within 1 year of taking the class, or you will be required to attend the course again. After you have followed every step above, call the Department of Revenue Dealer Licensing Office at 573-526-3669, option 7, which is to expedite you through past the other conversations that they're going to be suggesting on that phone call to find out your exact licensing fees. Mail your completed dealer application, business photograph, your original security bond, an irrevocable letter of credit, a copy of your dealer insurance policy, your background check, a check or money order for all licensing background check fees made payable to the Missouri Department of Revenue, and your original dealer educational seminar certificate of completion to the Motor Vehicle Bureau at the dealer licensing section in Jefferson City. So you would do, I'm pretty sure, the same thing for whatever state city that you are in. And it says here in bold print, incorrect license fees will result in your dealer application to be rejected or delayed 4 to close attention to the detail. You really got to get it right. Give them the correct information that they need. Give them the pictures that they want. Fill out everything that they ask you to fill out.
Now we learned too, though. You know what? There's an easier way, and that's to apply online, because when you apply online, and if you don't have something uploaded, then it won't accept your information. So applying online, and we also learned that the license comes to you faster if you apply online because you avoid the postal system. But just make sure you have everything together before you do this. And we're not even scratching the surface because, again, this guy had 4 hours and he couldn't go through the whole book. We're just giving you an introduction of a wonderful entrepreneurial opportunity because, again, we have to make sure that we are invoking many lines of income or streams of income and also setting our children up for the great mind to be business people. So with that being said, Scotty, were you able to pull up that YouTube? Because what we want to do is provide a twist. Like I said in the beginning, I was thinking of becoming a teacher or an instructor for this class or this course.
Hi,
so this man is actually giving us information as far as like where you actually do and don't have to be concerning the dealership itself. So, Scotty, do you have that video?
A licensed Colorado car dealer. I have some extremely important information to share with you. Knowing this could make the difference of you getting or not getting a dealer license. Want to know what it is? Okay, here we go. When you read the dealer license requirements for your state, you may assume you need to have a lot to qualify for your license. Well, let's see what a few states say in their dealer license requirements about a lot. California. There is no reference to lots in their licensing rules. California requires you have a business location. You cannot sell from your home. Texas. In the license requirements for Texas, there is no mention of a lot requirement. You must have a business location. Missouri. This state requires a business location with a display area or a lot. In other words, a display area can be inside the building. No lot. Colorado. This is my state. I'm going to show you an example of a person who interpreted the rules for what they say, not his preconceived idea of a dealership. Colorado dealer license requirements are a permanently enclosed office, books and records safely stored, electrical service, restrooms used exclusively for dealer business only, parking spaces, permanent sign with letters at least 6 inches tall, must comply with local regulations and zoning. On the next screen, you'll see his dealership. Are you ready? Bingo! Wow, a commercial storage building. Doesn't look like a dealership. Doesn't look like a sales place. Where's his parking spaces? Inside? He simply found a location that meets the requirements for a dealer's license. So what does this mean? We need to think out of the box. I don't know of any state that requires a lot. Business location? Yes. And there are other ways to satisfy this business location problem. Now here's a question. How are you going to think out of the box when you don't know anything about the box? Doesn't that make sense? Do you understand you need more information about the box? Do you want an experienced mentor to show you all the roadblocks to getting a license and how to get around them? If your answer is yes, then go to Dealer License Headquarters. My website, dealer-license.com. That's dealer-license.com. Thanks for watching the video. Have a great day. Good luck.
Well, all right. So that guy was providing, you know, alternate information. And it goes back to what I was saying before. Although we're reading this book, and has lots of information, and it has lots of certificates, not certificates, lots of documents in it that you will be using for your business that are all downloadable from the internet. You don't have to use the ones in this book, of course. They're all downloadable. But although this looks like bona fide information, you always want to check for yourself. As this gentleman was talking to us through the YouTube, he was saying that there's certain ways around certain things. So what we need to do is make sure that we're checking up on the information. Okay. Checking up on the information, sorry, to make sure that we are, one, abiding by the rules and that the rules actually exist, because law and what somebody else just put down in a book can be totally different. So we just have to make sure that the two are one and the same. But that's very interesting. He's saying that, you know, some states you don't actually need a lot. So check your state to find out if you need a lot. If you don't need a lot, then it's kind of like Scotty was saying. He lives in North Carolina, and he's seeing people operating from what looks like their home.
Yeah,
so you just never know.
Yeah, I mean, like they using garages, I guess, for their office space. But, I mean, it's just a regular converted garage. But what I was posting in the chat room, I didn't mean to distract you, but I, while he was speaking, I just quickly looked, Googled North Carolina car dealer licensing requirements. So you can just put in your state car dealer licensing requirements, and it talks about what y'all talked about. Bonding, surety bonds are required. You will need to secure a $50,000 bond for one sales room / office place of business is in parentheses, and a $25,000 bond for each additional sales room office. A signed will attract customers and mark your business as a dealership, as well as comply with state regulations. So all they had to do was get $50,000 bond for their garage and call it their sales room, sale office, whatever, and they're using their yards. But this one guy, he turned his, it looks like a lot. He, I mean, it's on dirt, obviously, but I mean, he didn't pave it or put asphalt down or anything. But we know it's a lot because it's advertised as a lot. But this is in on a residential, I can't say neighborhood because that'll give you the wrong visuals. This is like a rural road, you know what I'm saying, where the houses are not right on top of each other and people have, you know, land. You know, so
right,
yeah, but that's all the requirements.
It almost looks out of place, but it's his yard.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, no, I can envision that, and that's an entrepreneur right there, and that's what we want to do. We want to inspire you to think about being on the other side of the desk. You know how you feel when you go in these dealerships and you sit yourself down and you're nervous because you don't know what your credit score is and blah, 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 the interest rate, yada, 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 all these crazy things that you have to go through to get a vehicle. Well, the solution is more simple than what you think. All you have to do is go ahead and become a dealer. Now, of course, there's lots of laws and there's rules that you need to look at, but don't make it a barrier. Don't make it a barrier. You can definitely do this. Now, we learned also that you have to... let's see, how does that go? You have to purchase a certain amount of cars in the year because you're re-licensed every year. How does that go, Robert? How do you know how many cars you need to buy per year? Oh, in your first year, you have to buy six, or you have to sell, I'm sorry. First year, you have to sell six cars.
Right.
So it always depends where your licensing falls. Like if you got licensed in December, you have to sell six cars. Are you trying to say something, Scotty?
Same here in North Carolina, but I think it's seven.
Oh, seven. Okay. So depending on how or what, when you paid for your license, but ultimately every year you have to sell at least six cars. That's how you remain in compliance. Now, I would hope that you could sell more than six cars. My goodness, at least a car a month, that's 12 cars. You could do that. So my thing is, this is another opportunity for you Again, be on the other side of the desk, and use it as a way to help other people. Oh, and Robert, what did we learn? That you could also take in other things as trade. That's another opportunity, especially like when we talk about what Tando Radio talks about, these crazy times that are going on. So what if you decided to trade, because you got that car at the auction for $300, but you want to sell it for $1,000, but somebody else has this wonderful water purifying system that you would like to have. What if you could trade them a vehicle for that water purifying system and it all balances out? So that was, oh, that was like great to me. I was so excited. But the only thing was, you can't trade what?
Real estate or land.
Yep, and you think that wasn't designed on purpose? Yeah, they designed that on purpose. They don't want you trading real estate or land, but you can trade other things, and I thought that was great. There's actually a form in here for that. I don't know where it is, but it's in this book where you could actually write down what it is that you took in trade for the vehicle. But, you know, that is a wonderful way to help your community. You know, if somebody needs a car, and they have some gold or some silver or some whatever it is that you might need. Shoot, whatever it is, they can trade it and get a vehicle. Because, again, from the auction, you bought it for the low price of $299.
That form that you're talking about, it's not even a really big form for that. It's just a part where you're applying the, that's power of attorney. It's a little section for it. It is, I think it's the application for title, but let me make sure. Go ahead, and I'll check. Yeah, here it is. It is the application for Missouri title and licensing. And simply, it's not really a form filled out something specific for that trade. It just has the trade value, other credit. It says other credit. Like on this form, it says a rebate, has a rebate dollar amount, the vehicle trade-in dollar amount, or other credit. That's where that trade amount would go there as other credit on the title and licensing application.
Okay, other credit, absolutely. Now, I mean, again, this book is huge. There's so much more to review. But at the end of the class, they give you a certificate of completion, which you're going to need to upload that, like if you're going to do the best way, which is to send it in online, you're going to upload this and your other documents for the application and send it in to the state. And then your turnaround time, I guess, is like, what do you say, 3, 4, 5, 6 days? It's very quick. If you have everything in place like you're supposed to, which you should because you're doing it online. So with that being said, I was very excited for this experience. It was just today. It wasn't free here. It was $400. Again, you may be able to shop around to different dealer seminars. I don't know. I was this particular one. I don't know. When I do my dealer seminar, I don't think I'm going to charge as much. You know, I really don't think I will, but who knows? We'll see. Because as you get into it and you have to figure out all the things that you have to do, then maybe I will need to charge. And then at the end of the seminar, he had a sign, Missouri Dealer Seminars LLC term of use. So there's a term of use and damage limitations and indemnification. So they covered themselves very well. I'm very impressed how they put this class together. Again, I would like to seek them to learn about how I could do it myself. I had to pray about that because, you know, I know how that goes. When people know that you want to do what they're doing, a lot of times it doesn't go too well. The first step I'm going to take is, you know, to go through the state and find out what that would look like. Okay, Robert, so we're down to the last 5 minutes of the show. What is your summary for the night?
Well, my summary would be that, you know, there's a wholesale and there's a retail market in every industry. And you, as our listening audience, you should get familiar with wholesale because you participate so much in retail. You should get familiar with wholesale. The auction is definitely the wholesale market for automobiles. So what we try to do is bring to your attention why you should be in business. When you buy wholesale, those cars are getting marked up almost 100% of the time, 100%, and sometimes more than that. That 100% markup should be in your pocket on everything that you do, whether it's buying clothes, buying shoes, buying gas, buying food. We got to learn how to keep that 100% markup, that 50% markup, that 30% markup in our pockets and invest that into other things that we may desire to do. And so what BIB is committed to is aiding and assisting you to get the correct information so that you can perform in your business as well as your own personal life at a much greater, on a much greater level.
Great last words. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. We appreciate it as usual. Join us here every Thursday live at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, where we bring you the latest and greatest endeavors in entrepreneurship. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Scotty, for joining us and participating in our call. Again, you can contact us at weareblacksinbusiness@gmail.com. Join us next week where we'll have exciting guests that you can interact with.